you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Incomparable, number 633, September 2022.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. I'm your host, Jason Snell. This is an episode about a Marvel movie. Yay, another Marvel movie was released. It was released on Disney Plus recently, and so now everyone can see it. Even if you didn't go see it in the theater, you can just like go boop, boop with your clicker, and you get the Disney Plus, and you say, Thor, Love and Thunder, and then it plays a movie. And then we're going to talk about that movie that plays when you do that thing that I just described. And joining me to talk about the, I can't believe this, fourth Thor movie are the following wonderful people. Kathy Campbell is here. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, please call me Mighty Kathy from here on out.
Ooh. From here on out. All right. The Mighty Kathy. Tony Sindelar is also, the Mighty Tony Sindelar also joins us. Hi, Tony.
Catchphrase. Hi, Jason. Thank you for having me.
And the Mighty Chip Sudderth is also here. Hi, Chip.
Hey, I think I figured out my catchphrase. Damn you, Tony.
That was Chip, not Tony, by the way, just to be clear. Chip is not Tony. So, yeah, four Thor movies. You know, if you'd asked me after one Thor movie, I would have said probably not. And if you asked me after two Thor movies, I would have said definitely not. No. But then Thor Ragnarok happened, right? I brought in Taika Waititi. And he changed the whole, actually the thing I like the most about the original Thor movie is that it's funny when he's on Earth and it's kind of goofy. And I feel like Taika Waititi was like, yes, that is the tone we're looking for, is funny, goofy, and then let's make it go into wild space things. These are space gods, they're Viking space gods. And Thor Ragnarok was a hit, people loved it. It's a really, really great movie. And so after the whole, you know, they had to have Thor be in the Avengers movies and kill Thanos, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And now it's like, okay, let's do another one of those Thor movies with Taika Waititi. And it's Love and Thunder. And when they announced it a bazillion years ago, the real surprise was that Natalie Portman was going to come back because she sort of faded away from the Thor universe.
Faded away or retreated in the background.
Ran away with the second one. Decided,
was unavailable for future movies.
Yes.
And yet she's back in this, picking up a storyline that's actually really recent in terms of the comics, which is of Jane Foster becoming Thor. And when they announced that, I thought, are they going to do the other part? Because, you know, it's kind of important. The other part of that comic story is that she's dying of cancer and she's also being Thor. And there's this really kind of poignant balancing point between those two aspects of her personality. And the answer it was not really, they didn't put that in the trailer, strangely enough. But yeah, it's in the movie. That's what part of this story is. You know, I don't know where to start. I think it does feel a little bit like they're trying to get the band back together, right? With this, I do feel like Ragnarok hangs over this whole movie. Like, can we do Ragnarok again? And unfortunately, I think like you can't. Like that was a special kind of thing. And they're trying. Taika Waititi is trying real hard to play all those notes again. And although I like this movie overall, I did feel like at several points that it was trying to live up to something that maybe. And replay the notes that maybe it should have just left alone and tried something different. Does that make sense?
It does. I think that when you look at Ragnarok, it's like people suddenly realized, you can do this with Thor? And then Taika Waititi and Kevin Feige get together and say, we should do this again with Thor. And they're, it's not this moment of discovery. It's this moment of trying to recapture and one-up themselves on it. And we'll get into it when we do the rundown. But I agree with you completely, Jason. There's a lot to like about this. I will identify the moment when my opinion toward this movie shifted from really to, okay, I'm on board now. but it took me a while to get there, I have to be honest. And I'm a Thor stan. I am, as has been repeated many times on this podcast, I'm big into Walt Simonson Thor, and I have sung songs about Beta Ray Bill.
Mm, it's true.
It took me a while for this one.
I love Ragnarok, and I also really enjoyed Love and Thunder, but I agree, it was trying a little too hard, and yet, because it's Taika Waititi, it's still so much better than so many other movies that you almost can't compare Love and Thunder to Ragnarok, because Ragnarok is so special. You have to compare it to, Thor 2 or literally anything else.
Thor 2 again.
And I was so excited that Natalie Portman was in this because I adore her. And I think that it was really smart of her to come back, but also how they used her. And I thought it was really special. It had those moments of poignancy, mm-hmm. I think, that helped stabilize it a little bit, but not too much.
Tony, what do you think?
I love Taika Waititi's work. I don't know if I've seen anything that he's done that I did not enjoy. And some of his stuff, I think, is just amazing. This is probably a little bit toward the bottom of the pile in terms of his stuff that and how I feel about it. I think this is a fine Marvel movie. It's a good Marvel movie. It's fun and enjoyable. It has some lovely moments in it and some hilarious moments that, you know, you're going to get from a Taika Waititi piece. But it's I think significantly lacking in some cohesion. And, you know, if you start to look at the edges of stuff, and there's some like just, I think the tone shifts are a little wild in this, and there's just some weird stuff kind of stapled into it, which, you know, I think all Marvel movies have a little bit where it's like, you know, we're trying to make a movie, but it also has to fit into our overarching plans for the MCU and whatnot. I did not dislike this movie. I certainly enjoyed watching it, but, you know, this is a much more kind of middle of the road Marvel movie for me. It's not one that, like, I'm super psyched to go watch again right away. And that's a little disappointing coming off of Thor Ragnarok, which was, reigniting a lot of energy around Marvel. It's not bad, but it's not amazing. It's not going to change your life and change how you feel about Thor. And it's got some stuff in it that's kind of clunky.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to live up to Ragnarok. I think that is part of the issue. And whether they tried to avoid it or not, I mean, either way, you're going to end up having to be compared to it. And that was kind of a magic little movie. And this is different. One of my intros that I was toying with doing for this podcast was saying, Christian Bale, Russell Crowe, Natalie Portman, it could be a prestige Oscar picture.
Yeah.
It's Thor 4. And so I wanted to talk about, so we mentioned Natalie Portman. She's great. She gets to wear the Thor outfit, but we also get this other story that's going on, which is that she's dying. And we get the scene early on with where she's in the hospital, and she gets like a voicemail from Stellan Skarsgård, is it? As Selvig, who's like, oh, I couldn't be there, but I hope you're doing okay.
Yeah.
And Kat Dennings actually appears in a scene with her, but it's very much like, you basically, you're dying, and she's like, oh, but I'm gonna have positive thoughts and work on my science in the meantime. And then she gets this, the premise of the movie is she kind of gets this call from Mjolnir, the hammer, who we, you know, thought, well, is shattered and destroyed by by Hela in Thor Ragnarok. And so she becomes Thor. Although I think that's actually one of the weird choices in this movie is that although it's really great when she shows up and it's like, well, wait a second. It's Natalie Portman and she's Thor, and Thor has that moment where she's like, what, Jane? And that's great. But I don't know. I feel like I really missed out on seeing Jane. Like, we see her like at New Asgard and then we don't see her again. It's like, I kind of want to see her become Thor, right? Like, I kind of want that magical thing to happen on screen. And instead the movie says, no, it's better if we see Thor get excited that Jane is there. It's like, I don't know if I agree with that.
Yeah, especially because we kind of have this little mini story at the start of the movie where it's like Thor and the Guardians of the Galaxy. Remember them? They're still here and they're doing stuff, and you know they're on an adventure. And it's narrated by Korg, right? And it's like it would have been nice to maybe also
director.
Get that. Yeah. It would have been nice to maybe get some, you know, the Mighty Thor version of that. Given that you think the movie is going to be a lot more about her than it is. I mean, it's great that she came back, and it's great that the character got actually to be like a more fleshed out character than any previous occurrence for it.
Have Kat Dennings do a narration that's a parallel narration that's telling Jane's story or something.
Right.
That might be fun.
Yeah.
That would have been amazing. Once again, poor female superheroes get a story that is not as great as it should be.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's great that she's in it, and what they do with her is great, but it's still the fact that they make the choice to have it be, well, no, Thor realizing it's Jane is more important than seeing her actually meet the hammer and become Thor. I'm like, is it? I'm not sure I agree with that. Like, I get that this is a Thor movie, but she also is Thor, and that's sort of the point of it. And so I was let down by that. Tony, you mentioned Guardians of the Galaxy, and I wonder if this has to do with Chip's disappointment, but I love the Guardians of the Galaxy. I love Thor with the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah,
I always
fun.
Thought that was a really fun combination, and yet it felt so obligatory. It felt like, well,
lifeless.
We last saw
lifeless.
Him with them, so we must show them together and then
say
goodbye.
And we have to remind you that, you know, it's like, this is basically also an ad for the next Guardians of the Galaxy movie, right?
Yeah.
Like, remember these guys? You're going to give us money to see them again soon.
Holiday special this fall, new movie next spring. Come on.
Yeah, they're even credited at the end as, and the Guardians of the Galaxy.
And the scene, you know, where they're doing adventures and they're fighting and they're on this weird planet with two bizarre alien races fighting each other. And Thor does the thing where he like does a split kick between two, I don't know, space motorcycle things.
Yeah.
Like, driven by biker
right?
owls. Yeah, that is all great. I'm not saying any of that is bad. It's mainly just that we got that instead of perhaps other things. And, you know, it is an interesting twist on the comics. In the comics, the identity of Mighty Thor is like a mystery. And they spend a lot of time like, who could it be under the helmet? And, you know, the marketing for this movie made it very clear
yes.
who it was
no.
going to be.
I mean,
so I'm glad they didn't.
Natalie Portman at Comic-Con and the trailers.
Yeah,
I mean,
there
you
is know,
no
and I'm glad
there.
They didn't see any need to repeat that. But it's hard. This is a movie that is crowded with a lot of characters and a lot of motivations, a lot of things. You know, they have a villain that is slightly more fleshed out than I think your average Marvel mm-hmm. villain in that, you know, I think, you know, there's a decent number of Marvel movies where the villain or at least their motivation is completely forgettable. And, you know, Christian Bale, he's not a forgettable performer, but it's just there's so much kind of stuff in here. You know, we want Valkyrie in here. We want Korg in here. It's just there's
a lot of moving parts.
Yeah,
there's a lot of moving parts, right? You've got Zeus as a secondary antagonist. You know, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of set pieces. There's a lot of scenery chewing, and it's all great, but it's a little crowded.
Yeah.
And, you know, bless his heart, this is a appropriately length movie. This is like a 2-hour movie, not 2 hours and 40 minutes or something ridiculous.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's
but,
a lot
but
to do in
it
2 hours.
It does feel like
you know?
A lot of choices to remove things were not made. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we'll put it
I
all
mean,
in there.
Yeah. You get to why did I say mile marker? You get to time code 2559 and Peter Quill says, you're really dragging this out. I mean. Earlier there, we have mm-hmm. the Guardians of the Galaxy literally rolling their eyes at Thor mm-hmm. while he's doing the bike splits. So, yeah, your point is well mm-hmm. taken.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, and that scene is the ideas in that scene are fun, but the scene goes on a long
It's multiple time. Scenes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like there's the setup for it, there's the big fight, there's the fallout from it, there's the awarding of goats. I mean, you know, then there's the goats on the ship.
Lots of goats. You know. Lots yeah, there's a, of yeah. goats.
There's the and so I appreciate, again, like I said, I like Thor with the Guardians of the Galaxy. I like that. But like, we all know this isn't a movie where Thor teams up with the Guardians of the Galaxy. I would see that movie. That would be a lot of fun. But like, if it's not that movie, why do we spend half an hour where Thor is just trying to like, well, sorry, where the Guardians of the Galaxy are trying to get rid of Thor?
Yeah.
Like, it just seems like the wrong place to spend your time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In a
yeah.
movie like this.
I wonder how many changes were in place because of COVID. Like, we know that this was planned to like begin production in like 2020. And I wonder if they had to make changes because they knew that maybe like Guardians of the Galaxy, whatever, 3, 6, 12, whatever, couldn't get made. Like, did they have to do a little reconstruction?
I don't know. They pushed everything back, but it's possible. I mean, this is the eternal question with COVID movies, like
yes.
how Doctor Strange was supposed to be before the Spider-Man movie, and instead they had to rewrite both so that the other one caused the other, and it was the wrong
yeah.
order, but they just had to go with it because that's how the release dates fell. And so, I don't know. I think they pushed these both back, but it was more like, well, when we last saw Thor, he was with the Guardians, so we have to deal with it. And then Taika Waititi probably said, well, awesome. That's fun. I'll spend kind of the first act of my movie just hanging around. It's just that, you know, knowing what I know about what this movie is going to be, they're not going to be in it. And so it seemed like a really extended prologue. And again, I don't want to overstate it, but because I there's a lot of fun stuff in it, including, as we mentioned, biker space owls.
Biker owls. Yep.
They're great. And then Thor breaks the Crystal City, the holiest place for the whole alien race. And
that
it's
was
like, oops.
Really funny. I did laugh out loud at that.
That's a Thor.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, so we mentioned Christian Bale. We should talk about him. Yes, it is. It's Batman in a different role. And also yeah. interesting that this is another very recent last 10 years comic book character. I think it's interesting that Marvel has been plumbing more modern, like actually during the existence of the MCU comic
yeah.
book takes. I think those investments in using their comics as their intellectual property lab are starting to pay off. So this is Gore, the God Butcher. He is the last of his race. His daughter dies, and then he survives long enough to find his God, who doesn't care about them at all. And he gets the Necro Sword, which is an eternal thingy that kills gods, who says, pick me up and I'll kill your god and it'll all be good. And so he does that, and he's like, okay, now I'm gonna kill all the gods. And it's like, oh no, okay, I get it. Thor also a god, so I see where this is going. But as we mentioned earlier, like, Christian Bale is a very good actor, and Gore has a real, I mean, I wouldn't put him at like Black Panther villain
yeah,
level.
Yeah, I mean, that's the top, right?
It's a gold standard,
Killmonger,
right?
Yeah. Killmonger is like, you know, you have a really good point. Your methods are objectionable, but like, you have a great point.
But Gore yeah. is close. I mean, he has a good argument, right? Which is, these gods, they aren't actually gods and they're awful. So
yep.
I'm going to kill them all.
It was a great example of showing a parent losing their child and
yeah.
turning to the dark side and being able to, this is what Scarlet Witch's story should have been.
Mm. So Gore is not exactly a household name.
No.
Now, few of the Now, Iron Man wasn't even a household name in 2008, if you're talking about the general population, but Gore is not Dr. Doom. He is not Magneto. He is not the Red Skull. If you have any history with Marvel Comics, but you haven't read any recent ones, you wouldn't know this character. And I've been out of the comics for a while now, so this is not exactly an iconic villain. He's no more iconic than Malekith, but he is played by an actor who actually wants to be there. I don't know. Gore felt flat to me because I guess I'm used to being spoon-fed heroes that I read about in my teens and 20s.
He's a comic book character, but only really in the sense that they told a story about him. And this movie tells that same story. So he's much more like a, you know, regular fiction character who had a story about him. He's not an iconic villain who returns again and again and again, but he's a good one-shot villain because his motivation is really interesting. And that, I think Jason Aaron maybe wrote that series of Thor that talked about Gore. Anyway, it was a good story because it was something you hadn't really seen before. This guy who's dedicated to killing all the gods, which we know since this is a Thor comic/movie, we know where that's going. He plays it well. Like, I mean, big headline, Christian Bale, pretty good actor. And is given the grief of his daughter and the betrayal that he feels toward his god for allowing his daughter to die is, I think, one of the secret successes of this movie. Is this movie is simultaneously absurd and about real serious things, issues of grief,
cancer,
and mortality,
child death. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and Natalie Portman dealing with, you know, Jane is dying and Jane's sort of trying to avoid it, but realizing she can't avoid it. And those are, I mean, in a movie with screaming space goats
and biker space owls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's pretty surprising, right? Like it manages to try to find some grounding in a movie that could seem otherwise to be utterly ungrounded. And I kind of admire that about it. That, again, this is Taika Waititi saying, I'm just going to do it. Because I think most people would be like, is that going a little too far? And Taika Waititi doesn't seem to know what too far is.
I mean, in the end, the movie is surprisingly more about parenthood than you think. You know, Gore's motivation is about parenthood. But there have been a lot of I lose somebody, now I become a villain kind of turns. And then the kids being kidnapped, that's a standard trope there as well. But then we'll get to the end and suddenly, no, the movie is actually entirely about parenthood.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's also about coming to terms with mortality, although you could argue that that's all wrapped up in parenthood too, is you have your children and then you've done your job. But I think the way that Jane's story is handled is really touching in that regard too. But you're right, Chip, it is about that. And again, set on this canvas, this is like a velvet painting of a rainbow space unicorn.
Yeah, on the side of a van. Yes.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, it's even arguably more than Ragnarok. Like it's further out in the kind of things it tries to pull. And so to have some emotional grounding, like, again, I had a moment, and I'm gonna harken back to when we did our Man of Steel episode, and I complained about how, you know, those two guys are fighting, and it's like they're invulnerable, and the city's being destroyed around them, and like who cares because they're invulnerable. And I was thinking about the flip side of that in this movie, which is, look, it's gods and god killers with magical eternal swords, and like how does punching resolve anything in this movie? It literally can't. And you come to the point where you realize the only way for this movie to work is for the emotional stakes to exist, because that's what's going to win or lose this battle, is the emotional stakes. Because it is so, and I wish more superhero and the like movies understood that, because, you know, they're all infinitely powerful, essentially, if you want them to be, if the plot requires them to be. And so having somebody overpower somebody else in the end is not, it's completely arbitrary and uninteresting. What's interesting is the emotional journey that the characters take. So
right.
Thor's relationship with Jane and Jane understanding her mortality and embracing the fact that she can be a hero by understanding that she is going to die at the end of it, but she still needs to do it. And Gore having his moment at the end where he's been planning on making... The movie ends with him making a wish, people. It's very weird. But his having his wish be to bring his daughter back to life instead of having his wish be that all the gods die. And then Thor having to adopt Gore's daughter and take her with him. All of those things are emotional resolutions, not whose sword or hammer or whatever is going to beat the other guy, because it's ridiculous. That's my rant, is they had to do that and they did it, and that's one of the things I admire about this movie, is that it knows that it has to do it that way because there's no other alternative.
And that's what I think is really special about Taika Waititi, is the fact that he is able to make those balances. So even though it's absolutely ridiculous, and you know it's going to be ridiculous if you saw Ragnarok, but it still has those moments of poignancy, those moments of, oh, let me think about what I would do if the gods killed my child type of a moment, as well as, you know, this idea of love and loss and the fact that Thor already lost Jane, but then didn't, and now he's really going to lose her, and how that affects him and his life and everything that he's done. And just, like, it's so complicated.
Right. And he lost his mom and his dad and his hammer as Matt Damon once again in yet another cameo out for us. So Thor's like, he's his vulnerable side we've seen for the last little while. And so he's sort of more in touch with himself than and his emotions than he was before, which is good.
And it's basically making it okay to have these emotions, to have these moments. Yeah. And you can still be big, scary god killer and make a choice for love and care and support.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The tone of this movie, and I can see how it might not work for some people. There are some people in my household it didn't work for, but like, it's completely absurd. And I can see how people who take their superhero movies a little more seriously than I do, and I love them, don't get me wrong, but they're ridiculous. And one of the things I kind of loved about this movie is that this movie understands that they're ridiculous.
Yes.
And I again, if that's not your thing, you might kind of be bugged by it or offended by it. Halfway through, I just shook my head and I said, this movie is the perfect tone for a superhero movie, which is, we know. It's ridiculous, but just, you know, we're all having fun. And I love it. It's funny because, you know, Christian Bale's in this movie. And boy, if his Batman movies were like, no, it's very serious, right? And this movie's like, no, it's, hey, everybody, it's Korg. Oh, I'm also the director. And we all know this is dumb, right? We're just having fun. And it's just such a different tone. And I really admire it because I think this is the right tone for a superhero movie, is exactly this.
Yes.
Let your feelings out, Chip. Let them out.
Let us know what you feel.
So in my defense, I rejected the Christian Bale Batman movies because I thought they were too serious. But I have a face of Poe sometimes. And yes, I can get into a Marvel movie that starts off with a Joe Satriani-ish fanfare over the credits and Guns N' Roses playing
lots
throughout
of Guns
all
and
this
Roses.
Other stuff.
So yeah,
not just one, not
lots
just one.
Of Guns N' Roses.
All
playing.
The Guns N' Roses.
But I think my sweet spot for what you're talking about, Jason, is actually Ragnarok, and not this, because the. You know, we've got Matt Damon and Liam Hemsworth hanging out doing Thor
so
on Thor
good.
Again. And it's great. But for the first half of this movie, I feel like the whole cast is doing Matt Damon and Liam Hemsworth. Whereas Ragnarok just struck that balance for me a little bit.
I get it. Like I said, I understand why other people might not want to push it this far. And I do agree there's a line where it becomes, we don't actually, it's almost like we don't respect the material anymore. I hate myself
for saying this because I feel like one of those humorless Star Wars fans, you know?
Oh, no.
Tony, you got to talk about Batman and Star Wars now before we're done.
Chip, I'm writing a sternly worded letter right now to you. I'm typing it out.
I apologize, Dean Sintelar of Batman University.
We lost our accreditation. I'm not allowed to respond to that title anymore.
Yeah, no, I get it. I think that's why, because I've seen really polarizing responses to this movie, and it's funny because I ended this movie with a huge smile on my face, and I was like, that was exactly the right level of ludicrousness for a Marvel movie, and it's like, they don't all have to be, like, look, Marvel movies are doing lots of different tones. I wouldn't want every Marvel movie to be this ridiculous.
No, definitely not.
But I did have a moment where I thought, you know what, that hit the spot. That was just goofy and ridiculous, and I loved it, but I can see why a lot of other people felt like it was too much. And there are points in it where it's like, even I think that there are points in that movie where it's too much. Like the screaming goats, you know, that's like one of those jokes that's really bad, but then you repeat it enough times that it ends up being funny, and then you keep doing it and then it's not funny anymore. Screaming
request
goats
permission
like
to go ahead and tell you when I came around and start okay. and started
yes,
to
please.
Accept this movie. Time code 1 hour, 14 minutes, 40 seconds, tiny moon, the crash of the boat,
yep,
and then the goat scream. And suddenly I was like, oh, okay,
yep.
I give myself permission to laugh at the goats.
That's
now.
The moment where it wraps around and the goats are funny.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the tiny moon, by the way, which I had a real like Super Mario Galaxy feeling for.
The Little Prince was the...
It is the Little Prince.
That's,
it
yeah,
is defi-
little
definitely
prince.
The Little Prince. But I love that. I've said before, I love it when I see a movie that does something that I don't think I've actually seen in a movie before.
Yeah.
And when they're running around on that little teeny tiny planet or asteroid or whatever.
Oh my gosh.
And chasing each other kind of around
and
the curvature.
And it's all black and white, and it, yeah.
Yeah, that was, I was like, this is great. Like, I have never seen anything quite like this before, and like, it's novel and weird, and yes, there were, and an area of space so dark that all color has been leached out of it. Like, okay.
Sure.
It is a great moment.
At that point, I was in love, and before that, the tonal fluctuations were just too hard for me. After that moment, and weirdly enough, you know, that gave me permission to love the movie. After that moment, the tone sort of settles down a little bit.
It
becomes
does,
a little more serious and to my taste, a little more earnest.
A little more conventional,
too. I'm an unfortunately earnest person. And then that's when the feelings and the drama of the stuff really, really feel right for me. And they're not interspersed with all of the... Matt Damon, Liam Hemsworth, the level of
the campy
stuff
feel.
That bounce. Yeah.
I think for me, maybe what trips me up is a little bit, it's the combination of the tone switches combined with some like weird pivots in the story that feel like stapled together. I mean, I think especially when it goes, there's the pivot from Gore is going to go and kill all the gods. And it's like, well, that's not great. We don't like that, I guess. But then we meet all the gods, and it turns out they're not so great either. And then it's like, well, you know, I mean, like, Zeus is in charge of all of them, and he's not. I mean, like, I don't know. Like, that seems like they can work that out. And then he steals a bunch of children, and then it turns out that it's not that he wants to kill all the gods. It's that he needs Stormbreaker, right, as a MacGuffin.
Right.
And, you know, we kind of have this thread in this movie, which I think is generally fun, where we have these three sentient weapons or some kind of sentience to them, right? The Necrosword is evil and has corrupted Gore, and you know, Stormbreaker is jealous of Mjolnir, and Mjolnir is, I guess, trying to protect Jane, though it's unclear, also possibly killing her. Things get a little hand wavy there, I think, for me. But I felt like it was that pivot from gonna kill all gods to actually really focused on Thor, and so gonna abduct a bunch of children as a trap for Thor. Like, I guess that was where I was like, what's this movie about?
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that was, I think, and you know, I think it's, it works pretty great as a theme park ride, which, you know, I think is not, to me, is not a slight against fun action movies. It's just some parts of the magic trick, you're like, wait, why is this happening now?
There's some things that are, you said stapled together, and I think there's real truth in that, where it's sort of like, well, we need to get from point A to point B here.
And it's hard, because, you know, I'm not... I'm in favor of saving children. Let me just come clean as that.
Thank you. But
good on you, Tony. Yeah,
but suddenly, but like the motivation from we need to save all gods, and it's like, do we? To it's like, well, he has stolen a collection of children, and that's real bad. It just suddenly there's like a weird switching of stakes that is kind of confusing as to what Gore really cares about, and the children in peril. It just feels a little cheap, I guess, as a thing.
I'm not a fan of the children in peril thing. I think this movie tries to give it a real light touch, which I think is the right way to do it. Like, Thor keeps appearing there and talking to them, and there's like comedy while Thor is with them.
While the children are locked up in like a bone cage. Right. Yes.
Yeah, and it's headed for the moment where they are all given the power of Thor in that rousing thing in the climax. And
what
and the kids
is
help
more
save
motivating
the day.
Than child soldiers rushing in to save the day?
Yeah. Well, I know this is what I'm saying is there is a read of this movie where it's like, well, first the children are in peril, and then they're turned into child soldiers. And it's like, yes. And I read an article, a whole article about how this movie was awful because of that. And I thought to myself, yeah, but the tone of the movie is not the way you're describing it, right?
Like, yeah,
the
movie's like, I mean, there's a little girl shooting lightning bolts out of her stuffed bunny. It's not, you know, to fight shadow monsters, right? That are like these, it's children fighting nightmares, right? Yeah.
It's Doctor Who-ish, in fact, even a little bit.
Yeah, it is, and it's unclear to me where those shadow monsters were really coming from or what's up with that, but like, it's children fighting these things that came out from under their bed in my head, right? I mean, we're not seeing children getting cut down by, you know, gunfire or something, right? You know?
And they're very obviously being, you know, owned by the power of the thunder gods. It was so ridiculous with the shining and the glowing and the bodies of the children moving in ways that they wouldn't normally be moving, that it didn't feel like, did we just watch that? Is that what happened? It was okay. Not that child soldiers are ever okay.
Yeah.
But...
Well. We're empowering children to fight their demons or their nightmares, right?
This is the line Taika Waititi is trying to walk, right? Because he wants that to be the moment where it's like the kids are empowered and they fight their nightmares. And they're the children of the gods fighting the nightmares created by the guy who hates the gods. So who's mourning his own child, right? There's a lot going on there. But I was thinking... Taika Waititi is also the guy who thinks he can get away with anything, right? Because of the tone. And I'm reminded of that because, of course, he made Jojo Rabbit, in which he plays the imaginary friend of the main character, who is Adolf Hitler. But, you know, funny. And it's like, Taika Waititi and you know, Jojo Rabbit, I like Jojo Rabbit too, but it's like, he seems to really believe that he really can just do anything and take it and make it light and funny. And I think it's a real litmus test where, like, I do not deny anybody looking at this movie and saying, I don't like the kids in peril and I don't like the child soldiers thing. I totally get why you would say that. And all I could say is, if you buy into the ludicrous tone of the movie, you forgive it, because you know that those are A, fictional characters, and B, they are going to have their great moment where they are victorious and all of the, you know, those things happen. But I totally get the level flat read of literally what's on the screen, which is child peril and then child soldiers fighting a battle at the end.
To me, it's just the whiplash from going from kind of the comic bookery children with lightning bolts coming out of their eyes to, you know, they pass through the portal and it's like, oh yeah, Jane is dying of cancer. That's where I get the whiplash, I guess.
Yeah, totally. No, it's all over the place. And I, like I said, I kind of admire it, but it is also just like,
And I mean, I think some of that whiplash is intentional, and it's just maybe it doesn't work with me. So maybe this is not a critique of Thor: Love and Thunder. Maybe this is like, what's wrong with Tony Sindelar? How can we fix him? slightly smaller budget, smaller budget project.
Let's make this podcast. What's wrong with Tony Sindelar?
All right. So if we're done with that, then we can start the real podcast. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody, to What's Wrong with Tony Sindelar?
Is this an intervention? Did I
surprise?
Okay, so we skipped over a couple of things that we need to address. I've got a happy note here, which is Valkyrie. I love Tessa Thompson. I love her Valkyrie character. They never give her enough to do. She still doesn't get enough to do. But I'll tell you, it feels to me like because she doesn't need to be in this movie at all, right? Mm. I feel like this movie's trying very hard to get Valkyrie as present as it can in a movie that otherwise doesn't really need her. It does give Jane someone to talk to and at a couple of points, which I think is good. And the character is great. I just had that thought, which is like, I appreciate that you shoehorned Valkyrie into this movie. Valkyrie is not a character who should need to be shoehorned into anything.
How do you feel about shoehorning Sif into this movie?
Well, I mean, Sif is more like, hey, you guys remember Sif, right? Well, she lost her arm, but it'll be fine. But Valkyrie, I like at every turn, and remembering she only was introduced in Ragnarok, but as then appeared in the Avengers movies. But like, such a great character, and Taika Waititi wants to use her, but his movie kind of has no real role for her. So she does some stuff and it's great, but all it does, what I'm trying to say is, all it does is remind me that we need to see more of her than the movie or any other movie seems to be willing to give us of Tessa Thompson.
Can we please have a Valkyrie movie?
Right? I mean Jane dies at the end of this movie, so I was thinking, could you not do like a Thor movie with Jane? And like, I understand why she dies, and it's very poignant, and I like that choice, but what it loses is the ability to have her be in another movie, whereas Valkyrie is still right. She's right there, people.
Valkyrie in Ragnarok had dropped out and was sort of not involved and then made herself involved. There's almost some sort of verisimilitude, you know, and Tessa Thompson is like, do I really need to be here? But I'm enjoying being here. It's almost that same level. She is loads of fun. I do like that they find an excuse to give her Zeus's thunderbolt so that she is in the big fight scene in Black and White World. She is on an absolute equal level with Thor and Thor.
Yep.
I see a place for her on Disney Plus. I see a place for her a movie if you want to give it to her. But Tessa Thompson and Valkyrie both seem to be comfortable being on the side, getting drunk and commenting on everything around them.
Mm. I mean, I think there was a little bit of an attempt to like, can we have an adventure movie in here where it's not just Thor, it's Thor, it's Mighty Thor, it's Valkyrie and Korg. And it's just, it didn't have enough
Thor
room
family
to breathe. Right. And it's Thor family to replace the Guardians of the Galaxy family. And I think they just didn't, you know, I feel like there's little bits of that in there when they're in, you know, God City, Omnipotent City, but there's not enough of it. And there's a lot of Valkyrie like standing there in the background, and you know, it's hard. We've got a lot of characters here, and it's clearly the movie is about Thor and Mighty Thor and Jane. There's a big shadow there that is cast over Valkyrie, and you know, I mean, Korg doesn't really get to do much in this movie other than be silly. And well, he does get to narrate part of the movie.
Right.
And it is hard. That kind of squeezes out some Valkyrie there.
Yeah. But again, also she seems so superfluous at points that I was grateful that they included her, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But still it's not enough.
Well, it's the same, like they apparently Jeff Goldblum and Peter Dinklage came back too.
Wow.
But their scenes were cut from the theatrical release.
Because it's not a 3-hour long movie.
Because it's not a 3-hour long movie. Mm-hmm. And so they could have done, you know, had Jeff Goldblum have a single scene and just be like, hey, yeah, we've got Jeff. And they did it. I love
Jeff Goldblum, but I don't need that in this movie. You know?
No. They could have put Peter Dinklage in it. They could have had Howard the Duck in it. They could have had Beta Ray Bill in it. Sorry, Chip. But like, I guess that we'll save that for Thor 5. Really? Five?
He will return.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Thor, I feel like, is not going anywhere in the Marvel Universe, but I'm unclear whether they'll do more Thor movies or not. Like, again, this is the first fourth Marvel movie of any kind. Okay. We have to
talk
about it.
He's got a place to go, though.
Yeah.
But we'll get there. We'll get there.
Let's talk about the thing that we haven't really touched on yet, which is the little side trip to Omnipotent City, where they visit the other, which I think is just Mount Olympus in the comics, where they visit the other gods and they want them to all join up because the guy is coming to kill all the gods. So let's go kill him instead. And the response is basically, and they talk to Zeus, and the response is basically, look, here we can hide from him. So why would we leave? And they're like, but we must fight. And again, it goes how you might expect. So here's where I'm going to say some unkind things about this movie. I feel like this scene goes on forever.
So long.
Resolves nothing. And I'm just going to say it. Russell Crowe, one of our great actors, I think this is a terrible performance. It's kind of like he's doing, I don't know, Mario? And I think Greek Mario. It feels really like Russell Crowe made a decision to do a funny voice and everybody was looking at each other like, should we tell him? And they're like, no, I can't tell him. It's Russell Crowe. We'll just let him do it. And he's mumbly. And I guess, you know, there's tonally, it's like, well, oh, Zeus turns out to kind of be a jerk and a coward. And he's this.
Spoilers for Greek mythology. Yeah. And he's Zeus is kind of a jerk.
Yeah. And also a coward and also kind of a mumbly, almost Marlon Brando-esque kind of mumbly Island of Dr. Moreau. Marlon Brando, by the way, the bad Marlon Brando kind.
Yeah.
I think it's a disaster and it's the worst thing in the movie. And I think Russell Crowe is the worst single thing in the entire movie.
All right. Well, I viewed it differently. I thought it was funny and has some great comedic moments in it. This is one of those parts that feels stapled in that they go there, they learn nothing.
Nope.
No one joins them.
They do nothing. I guess they,
yeah. And so that was like, you know, I was like, oh, clearly some god is going to pull them aside on their way out and be like, I'm sympathetic to your cause. Let me come along with you. And it's like, nope, we just leave. And we just smash our goat boat through the giant stained glass window and we're out.
Jason, how can you this scene was so essential because how would they have figured out that Gore was seeking eternity if Zeus hadn't told them? Never mind that we had no reason to know why Zeus knew this. No. That made the whole Omnipotent City
thing
essential. You know
what? I keep forgetting that eternity is even a thing because it gets dropped so late in the movie and has never been mentioned before. And they never get into the rules of like, so the first person to go there ever gets a wish. A wish? That's the legend? How do we have a legend if only the first person gets a wish? Because Thor and Jane don't get a wish. So... yeah,
they had to keep this whole section scene thing for the credit scene.
Yeah.
You know, you had to have that moment.
That's what I thought. What thought that Chip was going for, which is, but if we didn't have this interminable scene in an Omnipotent City, how would we get Brett Goldstein as Hercules in the mid-credit sequence? Mm. And I've got a response for that, which is, hey, how about this? How about you introduce Hercules in this scene, and Zeus says, "Look, I'm not going to go, but you can take my boy.
Right.
He'll help you out,"
okay.
And then have Hercules join them for the final climactic fight and help the kids because we know that Roy Kent loves kids.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, I don't know what they're going to do with the MCU version of Hercules, but you could totally see how Hercules and Thor and Mighty Thor would like clash heads as being and especially like, you know, that we in kind of a passing of the torch of the Peter Quill Thor, you know, smashing heads because they can't agree who's in charge and who's the alpha SC bro, you know, like they could do that with Hercules, but no, we only paid for Brickle. Goldstein to stand there. Awesome.
I'll be fascinated to see how what they do there, because there's not a lot of distance between Thor of Ragnarok and Love and Thunder and Hercules of the comics.
There really isn't. Yeah. Oh,
are they just setting Britt Goldstein up to replace Chris Hemsworth when Chris Hemsworth becomes too expensive?
I don't know. He is probably close to being too expensive now. And that's why they did one last...
What else is he going to do?
Right, that's true.
I don't know. I should say, I totally understand why somebody would like Russell Crowe's performance. It is very particular. And if it works for you, it works for you. And I had that moment where I remember it was hanging in the balance. And I was like, do I like this? Do I like the Greek? Do I like the Greek accent? And I, like, as I was watching it, I was like, no, I don't. I decided I don't. But it is a choice. It is a choice.
It is a very, very strong choice. It is. You know, I mean, Taika Waititi has not looked up the word subtlety yet. He's too busy doing awesome things. But yeah, no, to me, the idea that, you know, the king of the gods is like your dirtbag uncle, I'm here for it.
Well,
so,
all right. in my extensive research for this podcast, a.k.a. opening up the Wikipedia.
Wikipedia, sure.
Yes. Which, of course, we all know is 100% factual and always true.
Are we entering a riot? Our IMDb trivia portion of the podcast.
Apparently, Russell Crowe wanted to do both, like, wanted to do Greek, and Taika Waititi thought it would be too much, and Russell Crowe did scenes in both, and Waititi was like, okay, you can do it in Greek.
In a Greek and a British accent, and they use the Greek accent. I don't know if I believe that or not, but it's a, you know what? I would dislike this. If this was a super weird Russell Crowe cameo where he was in one scene and said nonsense in a Greek accent and then went away, I would be like, that was great. That was so strange. The problem is it's embedded in this very long, unnecessary scene in Omnipotent City that doesn't need to be in the movie.
Yep. I mean, we do get to see naked Thor,
that,
which,
you know, look, the jokes, those, some of my favorite jokes are in that part. I like when the screaming goats break into the thing and say, let's get out of here. Also, because it means that we're out of here.
Yes.
I like it when Korg is strapped to the back of Valkyrie's head.
And when, but when Thor, when it's like, you whip too hard or whatever, and all his clothes come off.
Yeah.
That's really funny. That's a really good bit. Like, honestly, I know it's cheap, but like once Thor is naked, all the young ladies who are around Zeus start going, oh, it's like something right out of like Beauty and the Beast or something like that, where it's where it's just they're all just like, oh my God, because Thor is, you know, naked. I thought that was all funny too, very broad but very funny. It was just, again, there was a lot of Omnipotent City, more than I think I would have liked. And also not weird enough. I got to be honest. I wanted more weird gods in it than there were. There were some weird gods, but like,
we got to see them, but they didn't do anything. No. Right. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I guess, I don't know. It's like, we could have had where was the movie where they're just hanging out there for an hour and Korg is chatting with all the weird people.
Get ready, Tony, because I'm going to do a Star Wars thing here. Right.
Oh. Is it about cloaks? Hoodie cloaks?
This scene is much more like a scene in a movie where they go to the Senate and have a debate.
It is where
you say, look at all of the aliens, when you know what it should have been? Should have been the cantina, right? They should have gone to God City and met up with Zeus in the God City bar where there's lots of weird gods with lots of weird...
Oh, he's got the round booth at the back. Oh, it's great. Yeah.
And there's jokes about the weird gods.
It's hard. There's a floating dais coming down in a Senate will just never be cool.
It's not going to work, right?
It doesn't work. I'm sorry. It's been ruined for everything.
I mean, if we had seen E.T. we would have been like, wait a second, is E.T. a god? That would have been interesting, and I would have had lots of questions, but no. Anyway.
No, Jason, that's just the god that E.T. worships.
Or even throw in another cameo. You know, I love... the Men in Black joke of weird people that are seen as aliens, like do that for one of the gods too. Like, let just like have somebody that I don't even know. Have Madonna there.
Something. Have one of the Eternals there. Oh yeah. Oh right. Right. That would be like what is the comic now? I'm never going to remember it, but there's that comic about how the gods come back to life and it's an indie comic. So yeah, totally
Wicked Divine.
Yeah, that's it. So totally have like Annie Lennox there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh.
Stevie Nicks.
Got it.
Yeah. Like,
Now it makes it. Or I mean, Slash, okay? Put Slash in it. You got all the Guns N' Roses.
Right? Or
just have Slash there with his top hat, and they're like, oh, I
Keith
get it.
Richards?
Why you're good at the guitar. Yeah,
nobody
exactly.
knows why he's still alive. Like, just
it turns out he's one of the gods.
Yep.
Could have done it.
And we know he'll do silly things because he did Pirates. So
It is, I think, perhaps the part where it's the most like, look at all this stuff that we made with CGI, and there's the set is huge, and then they're fighting guards or like robot ghosts or something in front of Zeus, but it's like these people don't have names, we don't care about them. It is perhaps the part that looks like the most kind of like all of this just happened on a green screen.
Do gods have robots? How does that work?
I don't know. They like evaporated when they got stabbed. So
because
yeah,
of ghosts, sort
yeah.
of.
Yeah. Or, I don't know. I mean, they're not like, there's not like a god of guards, is there? Because he's dead now.
Yeah.
So
they do end up traveling to we get the moment where they go to save the kids, and it turns out that it is a fake out, because what they need is Stormbreaker, because it will open the Bifrost, and that's the whole key, is the Bifrost will get them to Eternity, where there's the magic wishing well. And so that leads us to our kind of final fight, where Thor leaves Jane behind because Jane is getting sicker. Because when she is Thor, she's actually not able to heal herself, which, again, I don't think is super... Like, I get why they're doing it, and I get what's in the comics, but it's inconsistent, right? Because originally we're told it's going to make her better, but she's already very sick. So it's not... It can't really make her sicker. It can just not make her better. It's you really got to kind of take a leap there. But the idea is that she stays behind, and Thor is going to go and find the kids, which he does, and he gives them the power of Thor, which is a great callback, right? It's like, you're all worthy and you all have the power of Thor, and so they are fighting the shadows while he tries to stop Gore. But of course Jane and Mjolnir senses that Thor is in trouble, and so Jane appears to save the day, and they stop Gore, but he gets his wish. He gets, I hate it when you stop the guy but you don't prevent him from going through the door to the magic realm. And that leads you to your emotional, Jane sacrificing herself to save Thor is part of the emotional climax. And then we're left with that last little bit, which I thought was really interestingly done, where they go through the door and suddenly they're just like in the water.
Yeah.
And they're in this weird null kind of state. And this is where they have the conversation with Gore, which is like, well, what do you want to do here? You've got one wish. You can kill all the gods, or you could bring your daughter back to life. So do you choose love or do you choose hate? What are you? Is there anything left of Gore now after the Necro Sword and after all the killing you've done? Is there anything left of you? Because there's clearly only one decision you can make here. Are you capable of making it? And, you know, he does. After
turns out he can.
After getting a promise from Thor, basically, like, well, when I'm gone, will you take care of her? And so that's what I was saying before. I like the emotional climax, because what else could it be? What, like, literally, how else could you end this movie?
I mean, they could have done it, and we've seen these types of things happen where the best choice to have an emotional ending for a movie is not picked, and they made the correct choice this time. So good job, Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
With kind of a big, you know, pivot for this character now, where Thor is a dad, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I you know, I don't know when we'll see Thor again, but it would be, to me, pretty bad if they just kind of ignored that, right?
Exactly.
Like, he should be pretty busy, right? You know, raising this child to be a superhero or whatever they're gonna be. You know,
if Valkyrie is in the next Avengers movie as the babysitter,
oh my
I don't
gosh.
Like that. No.
No. I mean, I feel like this could be the end for movies starring Thor. Not that we wouldn't see Thor,
right?
But it feels like he's got stuff to do now for the next, I don't know, 12 years. So kid goes to space college or whatever.
He's got a place to go, I think. And this is why I think that, you know, whether Chris Hemsworth does another Thor movie or shows up in another Avengers movie or whatever, I think that they have taken goofy Thor as far as they can,
mm-hmm.
At least far enough for my taste. And this is coming from a guy who didn't absolutely hate Thor 2. But we've done funny Thor, or if you care, or if you prefer Thor with a personality. Let's have him with a different personality. Let's have Dad Thor.
He's got to grow up.
Let's see him.
Right? Yeah, I mean, part exactly. of Thor's God story is that he is the heir to Odin. And theoretically, at some point, you know, Thor grows up and takes his responsibility seriously and is a father and well, is a important member of the Asgard community, I guess.
Oh, Jason, bad news about Asgard.
I mean, okay, important part of the coastal Norway
community. New Asgard community. Okay, well, they've got like a great leader. So
here we, this is how we have Thor at Dad Thor come is we have a Valkyrie movie, all mm-hmm. about new Asgard politics. I want to see their HOA meetings. I want to see the
here's my pitch, Kathy.
Ooh,
here's my
yes,
pitch.
Give me.
The next movie is a Valkyrie movie, and the story is that Thor. She's bored of being the king. Mm-hmm. And so Thor takes her place as king. And it's sort of like everybody loves that because everybody remembers Odin and wasn't he great? After he died, they destroyed his planet. So yeah, I guess he was pretty good. He kept his did he keep his planet from exploding? Check. All right. Good. Mm-hmm. And so Valkyrie gets to go off and have adventures while Thor stays back at home. Mm-hmm. With the kids at New Asgard, and so Thor is like more of a sidekick and mentor slash advisor character, while Valkyrie is off, I don't know, fighting crime, solving mysteries, whatever she does. We'll work that part out. Yeah. That's not part
like
of my
Mark
pitch.
Ruffalo and She-Hulk.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Ooh.
Sure. But yeah, you're right. Thor four movies later, right? Like I feel like they have progressed Thor to the point where this is a good place for him to be responsible and grow up a little bit, and I mean the way they played him is not just goofy Thor, but also Thor who's been through a lot and doesn't know what he's supposed to do with his life.
Yeah, and no so Asgard, no hammer, no brother, no father, no mother.
Yeah, it's, so in that yeah. in
Thor
that case,
in therapy, please.
The end of this movie is really like Thor's got a purpose again. Like Thor, mm-hmm. Thor, he's still always going to be a kind of the sunny personality and going from place
to
place.
He has
someone
to take care of.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like that. And if they do more with this character, I think that's really interesting that he's more like that now. And he doesn't have the Jane Foster jokes anymore. He expressed his love for her. She died. But there's not more like, the movie starts and he's like, no, it's fine. We didn't break up. We just went our separate ways or whatever. Like, by the end, he's kind of like got over it and they've had their moment together and then she's passed away. And great post-credit scene, by the way. Any chance to see Idris Elba again as Heimdall and have him welcome her to the gates of Valhalla? Loved it. Loved it. What a great little moment, right? You
Perfection.
Did it. You totally deserve to be in Valhalla as the mighty Thor. Loved it. That was great. All right. Well, you know, again, I liked this movie a lot, but I also understand why it wouldn't necessarily be everyone's cup of tea. And I would actually say, addition to not liking the Russell Crowe stuff, what I said at the beginning is what I'll come back to here at the end, which is I think its biggest issue is that it's trying to live up to Ragnarok and it can't, but what could? Like that Ragnarok movie, I feel it was just like a perfect storm of creativity time in the Marvel Cinematic Universe for a change of pace, and it was new and it was interesting and it was a new voice with Taika Waititi. And this movie is, you know, it's never going to be as fresh because it's another Taika Waititi Thor movie.
Yeah.
And I think it's good, but I think that it part of its struggle is trying to figure out, like Thor, what it wants to be and how it can live up to its past. And, you know, and I just think that's still a good movie. I just don't think it's something that can live up to that other movie. It just can't do it. What do you all think?
As you know, we used to live in a peaceful oasis, but then our gods were murdered. The movie has in the opening act an As You Know Bop.
Yes. it does.
So Yeah, so that's just my way of saying I'm right there with you, Jason. It's a mess, and it's just not as good as Thor Ragnarok, but for all of the mess, in the end, it did get me to a place where I really cared, about the characters and really felt something in the end. Felt stuff for Jane, felt stuff for Thor as a dad, and goat screaming into a tiny moon. All of those pieces may not have added up to a perfect movie, but they did work for me.
This movie was absolutely ridiculous, and I loved it. And even with Russell Crowe, you know, I'm on Jason's team here, where Russell Crowe was the worst part of the movie, and that scene was the worst. Very major. I had flashbacks to Les Mis, where same situation. But I finished the movie with a big smile on my face. I finished the movie almost like, oh, I want to watch this again, which is rare for most movies at all. Like, I was excited to be on the podcast, so I had an excuse and a reason to watch it again. I liked how I felt while watching it as well as when it was done. And so I want more fun in my movies. I want more fun in my superhero movies. That's why I apparently am a Marvel girl, not DC. Like, give me more humor. It doesn't have to be full-on Taika Waititi ridiculousness, but give me fun, give me joy, give me, like, excitement, as well as give me the emotional beats.
You know, I'm a cynical jerk, and I've got the parts that I don't like, but at the end of the day, this is a movie I enjoyed. My life is better for having seen it. I will probably watch it again at some point. I think I'm not as enthused as other people, but, you know, there's a lot of things that I watch where I look at it and I'm like, nah, that was a waste of my time. That was a mistake. And this is far, far above that. So that is medium praise from Tony Sindelar.
That's fair enough. I like I said, I understand why this movie is sort of polarizing. It's so odd, and it is sort of stapled together, and it has lots of odd decisions, and tone is all over the place. And yeah.
And in the grand scheme of things, it is better for a Marvel MCU movie to be polarizing than forgettable.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Also, I don't know. I mean, this is a meta point about the whole MCU, but like, part of what I want out of an MCU anything, movie or TV show, is I'd like it to be different. Like, we've been doing this for a decade now. There have been so many movies, and so many of these standard superhero beats have been beaten. I love it when I see something new, and it can be new, a new visual or a new tone, or it can be a new character that is a different kind of person than we've seen before as a superhero. And there's lots of different ways to take that. There are lots of different variations on that. But I like it. What makes me sit up and enjoy a Marvel movie, and I love Marvel movies, right? But like, what, or TV show, like, makes me notice it more is it trying something different? Is it trying to be more than, like, the reason that I didn't love Falcon and the Winter Soldier in some ways was because it felt like it wasn't trying to be much of anything new. And I think that was on purpose. I think it was as designed. Whereas WandaVision, you're like, what are you doing with, you know, a sitcom parody Marvel thing? And like, as it's gone on, like Moon Knight, it's like, oh, this is you're trying to do a very different kind of story. And Ant-Man was like that. And Doctor Strange was like that. Those are the things that I have come to appreciate a lot about MCU projects, is can you bring something different to the table? And did Love and Thunder bring something different to the table? It did, but it was also kind of following the ground that Ragnarok had walked. And so that's why I've got some caveats about it, but ultimately, because it's so odd and has so many interesting tone choices in it, like, I'm going to give it to it, because it made me laugh with the choices it made. And I just don't want to be bored, right? I want to, when I see a Marvel thing, I want it to be interesting in a new way. I want them to not be resting on their laurels. And I think Ragnarok certainly did that. Love and Thunder did enough for me to feel that way.
I could buy that.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird, right? Like, we've never had anything like this Marvel machine, right? We've never had something with this many interlinked movies and TV shows and things. And
no.
This late in the game, that's sort of my litmus test, is like, did it do something interesting? You know, if it did, if it can break out of the machine and do something interesting, then I'm intrigued by that. That's what I want. And they do it more than you'd expect. Actually, that's the thing I admire about what they've been doing, is they actually are taking weird swings at it and not just resting on their laurels.
At its best, the Marvel Comics publishing history, there have been times when you've had Bill Sienkiewicz New Mutants, and you've had Ron Friend's Jack Kirby pastiches all being published at the same time, all this stuff. You're right, Jason. I mean, there's plenty of not only different characters, but different ways to tell adventure stories. And this is a good time for Marvel right now, where they are actually trying a bunch of different things.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they don't all work, but I appreciate that they're, I mean, recognizing that after Endgame, they were kind of like, okay,
now what?
What do we do now? And it's like, I know we said this on a previous podcast, but I'm just going to restate it here. The beauty of Marvel post Endgame is that they seem to have taken as their rule book, like, let's try a bunch of wacky stuff and see what happens.
Yes.
Because right now we got all the money and we're starting to build something new. So let's just try stuff. And it's not all going to work, but I'm so glad that they're trying that and not just going right back to, let's just make another Iron Man with a different Iron Man, right? Like, okay, maybe not that. Ironheart TV show, they'll do that, but that'll be different, right? That's the idea. All right. Fun time at the movies, or in my living room watching Disney Plus, and a fun time talking about it afterward with you wonderful people. Let me thank my panelists. Tony Sindelar, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Jason Snell.
Not Tony, but Chip Sutterth. Thank you.
Jason, I know you hate for me to leave this podcast right now. To ease the pain, why don't you take this podcast as a parting gift?
Where's Beta Ray Bill? That's my question. Where is Beta Ray Bill? Maybe Valkyrie can find him.
Yes.
In her movie. Kathy Campbell, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Jason.
It's one of your unicorns that they're painting on the velvet painting with the
yes,
rainbow that
exactly.
is this movie.
That is the van that goes forth to have Valkyrie lead the next mm-hmm. movie.
And thanks to everybody out there for listening to this episode of The Incomparable. We will see you next time.